Well, one can try to control competitive consumption in the same way that competitors try to control harmful effects of competition in other settings. So, for ages, businessmen have sought to control unfair, costly competition by getting together and fixing markets. So businessmen will get together and agree to set minimum prices, and they'll agree to divide up the market, so you get such and such a percent, you get such and such a percent, I get such and such a percent. Just as businessmen can conspire to fix markets and market share, we can get together with people and agree to fix consumption practices. And that means talking to people in our groups about the facts of competitive consumption and agreeing to limit it. I think it's possible. That kind of, yes?
I have a question because I didn't came with this question, but every time I keep waiting for you to answer it, you have yes, so can I answer it? I have no problem, you know, I don't like brand names and I don't need a Mercedes and everything, but I can live my life that way, and yet I don't want the people from the Mercedes company or the expensive lipstick company to not have a job. And so therefore I think those people that are buying the Mercedes, let them buy it because their job. So if we think we all price this, that's the way that we're not going to consume this kind of thing, could we employ, you know, what's the employment repercussion?
We can. No, we can save and invest, and invest in producers' goods, in better ways of making things using fewer resources, less energy. We can invest in the future of the society, our children, and we can consume more rationally. Irrational, wasteful consumption is simply waste. You know.
Warren, can I make a comment to her question, and that is, if people stop buying Mercedes, then they'll just buy General Motors cars instead. And the same companies that make, say, L'Oreal lipstick, that cost, I suppose, $10, $12, $14, also make Maybelline lipstick, which only costs $2 or $3, and it's the same product. So,
if they stop making a more expensive product, then the people who need it will buy the less expensive product, which is often just as good or sometimes better. If we don't buy into the market will stop and they'll go to something else instead.
Yeah.
And so those people will, their jobs will be different
from our place to do it. Isn't that how the Volkswagen
cars are? All around the country?
Yeah.
People wanted a small car.
Anyway, getting together, getting together with our friends to control competitive consumption isn't all that easy. Businessmen don't find it easy to fix prices. There's in any kind of cartel, there are big temptations to double cross by selling prices. Selling goods at lower prices and claiming more than your share. And getting together is easier in solidary communities. So just as the decline of community causes conspicuous consumption, people have to display their wealth to people who don't really know them very well, strengthening communities could help control conspicuous consumption. It should be easier to conspire to control competitive gift-giving, since competitive gift-giving does tend to occur in families and in sort of solidary communities where you can get together with people. However, controlling competitive gift-giving does require deliberate action and acting in ways that are that family members might find distasteful. For years, my brother and I would travel to my sister's house near Washington, D.C. at Christmas, and we would carry along gifts for the members of the family. And it's hard doing that on airplanes, you know. Yeah. Come back with lots of gifts. And so my brother, for years, my brother would give me shirts at Christmas. This is one of them. He died 9 years ago, and I still got these shirts. And I would give him a shirt. And I don't especially like the light blue shirt, but that's what he kept giving me. whenever he saw me, he'd see me in this kind of shirt, and presumably figured that I liked this kind of shirt.
Because in my family, we have 7 kids, adults, and, it got to be such a burden buying gifts for everybody that, first of all, we did name exchange, so you only had to buy one gift. And then secondly, we found we were getting gifts we didn't want, just like you were saying. So then we made a Christmas list of things we wanted. But then that kind of took the joy out of doing it because you knew what you were getting, or you didn't have a choice of what you wanted to give, really. So then what happened after that was that I think we began buying smaller gifts.
A few years ago, I announced to the family that I didn't want any Christmas gifts, and I wasn't going to give any, except the exceptions are children, naturally, and except for token items or amusement items. So people give me rubber duckies for my bathtub. Getting away from that competitive gift giving made the Christmas season much more pleasurable and much easier.
I asked my brother 1 year because he lives high up the hog and he sends beautiful gifts, but he doesn't know whether people like them. He was sending Pendleton shirts to my son-in-law afterward to buy them for $1 at Goodwill. And so I asked him, couldn't we give to Care? And he said his name. He mentioned it to his daughter, who was a teenager, and she was horrified. She wanted a present. So he sent me a gift in Care to Care in my name as well as a present. So he was more than that. He wasn't faithful.
In my family, we have 7 kids also, and we just eventually eliminated all the gifts to our generation. So, because I've got brothers-in-law, we got all the brothers-in-law and everything. And so we only give gifts to my parents and to the grandkids, and then it's easy. If you're a teenager, you get money. And then if you're a kid, you get a gift. But my parents get gifts. We decided they're 75, and they want a house full of stuff. So now we're giving them group, we're starting to do things where we give them group gifts, where we go in for one or two bigger items, a little more expensive items. But nothing expensive, because my family is really, really can't finish that. And so, like, we're giving them, like, 2 nights at a resort in Mississippi and which is something they can really use, instead of everybody giving them a shirt or slippers or, where they get 12 pairs of slippers or something. You know, who wants that, so.
Any kind of deliberate collective action requires becoming aware of competitive consumption and requires defining it as problematic. I think this can be facilitated by consumer education, learning about products and prices. And you can turn to publications like Consumer Reports, which I don't especially like, or maybe more specialized publications for your electronic gear or things like that. You can also do your own product testing. And here, you really have to be careful and do blind testing. Consume different brands of the same product without really knowing what is which. Years ago, I did this at some Prairie Circle dinners when I was asked to bring wine. So I'd have maybe 5 different kinds of wine and ask people to rate them. And when I did that, I did it a couple of times. Once there was a perfect negative correlation between the price of the wine and the preference order. So if you come to my house, you know what kind of wine you're getting.
And you're not a wine drinker.
One thing that doesn't work.
Okay, well, Consumer Reports does test for things like beer, where people can't taste the difference between expensive beer and cheap beer. Presumably, you can learn to tell wines apart and to spot an expensive wine, but do you really want to? Another kind of rational response is to try to be rational in choosing our reference groups. That doesn't have to be a passive process, and if you know that associating with certain kinds of people will lead you to irrational economic behavior, associate with other kinds of people. If you spend more of your time at Prairie, I think you'll be less likely to engage in conspicuous consumption than if you go to other churches, which I won't mention. you can invert the saying of Polonius in Hamlet and assert both a borrower and a lender be. So if you can borrow rather than buy, do so. And sometimes you can borrow from public agencies like the library or from private business firms. Or one can borrow from one's friends, and you can lend to one's friends as well. And there might very well be a role for groups like Prairie in stimulating borrowing and lending rather than buying. Another approach to the problem of conspicuous consumption is preaching, which is what I'm doing. But I'm rather dubious about the effectiveness of preaching. Very often people have a real interest in consuming conspicuously, or at least competitively, and preaching won't have much of an effect. And sometimes, I can see it myself, as more and more people buy expensive products, it's harder not to have them. My friend now expects me to have a telephone answering machine. If a lot of you start buying big, expensive sport utility vehicles, eventually, perhaps, I, just as a defensive measure for my own personal safety and that of my family, will buy expensive gas-guzzling sport utility vehicle, too. On the other hand, preaching might have some effect. The UUA, I left it at home. This, by the way, is a study issued for the General Assembly of the UUA, conspicuous consumption. And they have a little document that's awfully preachy, and it raises my skepticism. They don't mention one kind of preaching, which is ridicule. And I think ridicule might be effective in discouraging conspicuous consumption. It often is ridiculous. And all that's needed is for somebody to point out that it's ridiculous to make the consumer wish he hadn't spent all that much money. You know, this has been pointed out by writers for centuries. You know, they're always poking fun at the newly rich person who is foolish in consumption. And I suppose that's part of the story of Hans Christian Andersen's Emperor's New Clothes. I just need somebody to point out how ridiculous the consumption is. And my last solution, well, to the extent that reference groups are really large, it's impossible to get together with people and agree not to compete. And then you might have a role for government action. And if you agree that conspicuous consumption is harmful, then you might agree that the government should tax consumption, or at least the consumption of luxury items. And I think it's disgraceful that taxes are so low on expensive gas-guzzling sport utility vehicles. It's not easy to design these taxes. They're likely to end up as taxes on the poor, which is not exactly what we should have. But the government might also act as a lender of goods so that people don't have to buy. You know, the government does this to public libraries where you can borrow books and records. Technology can make borrowing easier. CDs are much easier for public libraries to hold and lend than LPs. They don't get scratched as easily. And it's getting increasingly irrational to go out and buy recorded music when you can go down to the public library and get it. I can't think of other commodities that, other goods that the government might go into business and lending.
You can rent a car now. Not the government, but maybe the government can get it.
That's from a private source. You know,
yeah.
You might very well. Well, yeah. I mean, it why buy a big pickup truck if you're going to use it for carrying goods once a year, when you can always rent a pickup truck for your moving. Finally, and I'm sorry, I'm going over. But I have to say something about children. I think the problem of conspicuous consumption among children is especially difficult to deal with, and I don't really have any good ideas about how to deal with it. But casual observation suggests that competitive consumption among children is really, really a problem. Parents are in a bind. A lot of what goes on in socialization of children, especially around adolescence, is training children to be independent. Don't be a baby. You know, make decisions for yourself and things like that. And once if you're engaging in that kind of socialization, which is really important, I think, in modern societies, well, then you can't turn around and try to make decisions about clothing choices for your child. You know, you're trying to make your child independent, and you can't say, but, not here.
Yes, what we did was when they wanted clothes that cost more because they wanted the brand name, we said, fine, we'll pay what the basic amount is, and if you want to put your babysitting money toward that, that's up to you.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments. I think one of the ways that our family is working on this is attempting to develop pride in lack of consumption and conspicuous display of that lack of consumption. Bragging about, look how old my dining room chairs are. I got a funny box at a garage sale that was falling apart, bam, put it back together, and developing that same pride on the part of the children, that they also can display how little they're consuming and make a big deal out of it.
But it's hard. Once they're in school, they're looking at their neighbors, and children are changing all the time, and they're looking at a constantly changing environment. I can wear the same shirt for 10 years, but your child can't. So you're always buying new clothes, and then what kinds of new clothes? And then you look at your neighbors to see what they're wearing, and if they're wearing Tommy Hilfiger or something like that, it's very hard for parents to do much. Children are in this situation where you're often made to feel ridiculous, and very often children are ridiculous, and it's painful, and you want to appear in a way that's okay.
5 minutes of questions.
Thank you.
We will be revisiting this from a different viewpoint. We've had Watkins talk about the UUA principle. So five and take your best one.
One thing Thorstein Veblen, of course, didn't know, in spite of his very valid theory, was the television and the relentless onslaught of image making, not just advertising, but advertising is image making. I will just throw out one ridiculous example that has to do with feminism. The lipstick here really doesn't hold, but I don't want to go into that now. A number of cosmetic firms are advertising, have pounced on this idea of I'm worth it. I'm buying the shampoo, the lipstick, and stuff because I'm worth it. And I noticed that about at least four different cosmetic companies are using the same inane thing. But if you are an uncritical consumer, of course, of this image making, you fall for that. And in fact, what a member of my own family, who's otherwise an intelligent woman, falls for that. So the only practical thing that I can see besides the things that you do individually on a grassroots level is to somehow manage to include critical consumption of media in schools. No, critical advertising, yeah, at home, of course, but I mean, it should also be really a required subject. No, but this is your family. I'm not talking about your family. I'm talking about a broader mass of people who needs to learn to read advertising critically and against the
brain. Barb?
I read an article someplace that was saying that in terms of your home interior, that people visit other people less than they did in years past, and therefore they're using what they see on television as a standard for how their home ought to look. Well, the you know, even a poor employee, say, sitcom family, is living in a $500,000 apartment. I mean, they're just the what people see on television is not realistic. But because people don't visit each other as much as they used to, they don't have a good guideline as a reference group of what they're, so they're using television as their reference group, and the television skewed way for the internet.
Yeah, the advice is don't be afraid to be an exemplary model. And I got a valuable lesson on this when I was in graduate school. When I was, you know, if I was going to hold a party, I would want my house to be really nice and have, you know, proper food and drink and whatnot. And my friend held a party, and we went over there, and these graduate students, the sink was full of dirty dishes. They hadn't washed the dishes for a week or two. It was a great party, you know, it's more, you know, the moral is, you know, it's better to get together with your friends and have a party than to spend a lot of time cleaning house. And I learned from my mom. Yeah.
I think the family is really, really important, and that, you know, the values that you give them, you know, they really make a huge, huge difference, and not to ever be discouraged about that.
Rachel?
What upsets me is the relentless pursuit of children to buy. Mm-hmm. The Pokemon craze terrible. I've heard of one mother who has outlawed Pokemon in college. I applaud her.
I'm sure we could find somebody to defend Pokemon.
What was the difference between that and the baseball cards when we were going out, or Barbie dolls and stuff like that? I think it's more of communication, and I think it's more of a control of parents in that aspect. Because, I mean, the craze, there's always been crazes out there. I mean, if you think back, I can go back to, you know, Hulu. So, I mean, they're always there. It's just a matter of how we control them. So, I mean, that's...
If you want to know more about Pokemon, you can ask Ben Rodriguez, who's the head. Daisy?
I mean, I could say that I'm very much against Pokemon and the craze, but you wouldn't believe how much socializing happens at school.
That's right.
Kids that don't talk to each other online, they socialize. You know, and it was from 6th grade down to kindergarten, and it was appropriate.
Does anyone have a specific question that is different from what's already been discussed, or specific comments that are different from
what's talked before?
Yeah.
Somebody in the back of the room?
Rick Owens, you had your hand up a long time ago.
Well, I guess my underlying anxiety has already been sort of alluded to, maybe in Aaron's comment originally, but if there should develop any widespread subculture of just sort of boycotting conspicuousness. I'm sort of counteracting it in Rachel's example with conspicuous non-consumption. The economic implications are fairly fundamental. There really is an anxiety that economic growth, widespread employment, and the sharing of the good times, the trickle down that's finally beginning to actually trickle down, will cease, and that those who will be punished will be those in the entry-level jobs who are working for the people who own the manufacturers and are making all these useless goods so that they can afford to purchase these useless goods. If we all simplify our lifestyles, if we all stop buying the stupid things and so forth, then doesn't this cause tremendous economic upheaval in the way things currently are? And isn't it just sort of inertia that impels us forward to just not grapple with all that, just go on the way we are, because after all, people are working and nobody is starving. There's no one we see in our middle class neighborhood.
Yeah, there are all these unmet individual needs in many levels of society, and all these unmet collective needs. And we'd be much better off, I think, in investing, for example, in higher education, creating a workforce where people really get good jobs, rather than the kinds of jobs they get in this really shitty jobs in this expanding service economy. And public investment and private investment in acquiring skills cost money, but it's going to pay off in a better quality of life. And waste doesn't pay off.
Just a quick point, maybe on the future. I'm wondering, maybe we can't do our consumption virtually.
There we go.
I was thinking how many magazines come into our house. And every citizen of the state of Wisconsin has, 4,000 magazines you can get free on the internet? I mean, it's all the common ones. And so maybe more of the things that we want are going to be electronic, which means there won't be so much waste. It won't be going off in the trash.
Yes, if we don't waste, we can buy better computer equipment.
Warren, thank you very much.
Can we quickly close? Billy and I thought, in the spirit of simplicity, we'll sing the final hymn without the piano. And I think the Shakers really didn't necessarily have piano.
Okay, that's in the Prairie Songbook, page 41, Simple Gifts. Let me merge. Introduce themselves. Okay, well, glad you're all here. Prior announcements, this is going to be really brief. The business meeting should be starting probably by 11:30, followed by the potluck. Today is a Prairie Fire deadline. Get it in today. We have guest editors, and please help us all. I'm not sure.
Oh, did the board see
it? The board didn't think of it. Who would like to make that happen?
I'll go downstairs and just ask.
Okay. And then this Wednesday, the joint Thanksgiving Eve service is at First Society at 7:30 p.m. 7:30 is the beginning of
rehearsals. All rehearsals.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And the, those who want to sing in the choir, be at First Society today at 12:30.
Okay. We'll try to get through all the business first. Is there any other serious prayer announcements? Shannon.
Yeah, I have two. It's time to sort of get the box at the table. Typically, coins in the holiday season. You can pick them up out, call and have them there. Also, in the same along the line of conspicuous consumption, get the time and the visit things to give. This Interfaith Hospitality Network Day Center has to be open 7 days a week, and all my volunteers are students. So I am short volunteers the entire month from November till January. I have a sign-up sheet up here, primarily Saturdays and Sundays. Typical shift is 7 to noon or 8 to noon and then noon to 5. But I'll take whatever anybody's willing to give me.
Okay, thanks much. Robin.
Nancy, good to see our annual holiday gift-making event. It's 3 weeks from today, from December 12th. And what we need is some adults to help coordinate projects, to help children go give the gifts, and also to set up and tear down at the end. And there will be a list of materials that we might need in the prayer time.
Okay, great. Daisy?
And for those who haven't heard the rumor, I have to give up treasure to the strong to take over.
Oh,
I hope to send the first. Related to that, because it's Y2K, I'm panicking. I don't want any bills or pledge checks after the 15th. Please
of December.
I've always
been
ready here, so I don't have to
remember.
Please put that in the
newsletter. Yeah, put it in the newsletter. Warren, excuse me. God, please speak.
I'd like to strongly recommend a movie whose main theme is keep away from conspicuous consumption. And the movie is called The Straight Story.
Yeah. Paula.
I'll be helping prepare breakfast at the Mama Shelter this Tuesday. If anyone would like to join me, let me know. I'm also taking the collection for the breakfast, and the can is on the guest at your table. And there's more, but check the prayers on it.
Okay. Are we ready for our reprise from the house party?
Well, we can break up while that's going.
Okay. But we'll have some musical accompaniment as we start rearranging chairs for the business meeting. So thank you all, and everyone can stay for the
I'm going to start out with a
Because